Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Bulls Beat Podcast Show, the Chicago Bulls Podcast.
Welcome back to the Bulls Beat, Bulls fans. Doug Tonis here with you discussing our Chicago Bulls. And if you listened to myself and Fred Pfeiffer on the Big Red Bus last week, you heard that I predicted the Bulls would go 2-1 this week. Looks like I really underestimated the amount of impact Chris Dunn would have on the Bulls. Bulls lost 3 straight. And now, if you were a fan of the tank, maybe you're pretty happy with those results, particularly with that loss to the LA Lakers, which propelled them ahead of Chicago in the tank standings. Chicago presently sits in a tie for 7th place if the draft were to go today. And if you aren't aware of how the draft works, basically, if you finish tied with a team, so right now Brooklyn and Chicago finish with the same record, you will split the ping pong balls of 7th and 8th. You'll add those up, you'll average them out, and each team will get that average. And then they flip a coin to see who gets the 7th pick versus 8th pick in the event that neither team wins the lottery, which is the most likely event that that would happen. So when looking at the standings right now, you see a lot of teams kind of still clumped very close to each other in the bottom. And the Chicago Bulls are just 4 wins ahead of Atlanta, who is presently dead last, and Orlando, who is last but with 1 less loss. They're 3 ahead of Sacramento, who's got 15, and 2 ahead of Dallas, and just 1 ahead of Memphis and Phoenix. So we'll see how things go at those teams. Now, it's worth noting that Memphis just lost Mike Conley for the rest of the season. He hadn't played much anyway, but he's not going to come back. He had season-ending surgery. And then also on the New Orleans Pelicans, though they're quite a bit above 500, they just lost to Marcus Cousins. I don't think the Pelicans are going to fall back all the way down to earth to where they'd be competing with the Bulls for a tanking prize. But, you know, their season could have just gotten a little bit worse as well. And so that's kind of a view right now of where Chicago stands in the draft. It looks like, you know, at the moment, they're still kind of in that range of that clump of teams that's probably 6-10. And if they trade Nikola Mirotic, I'm starting to think they might end up in that range. And so far, we've heard various things about whether they'll be able to trade Mirotic or not. There's some rumors saying the Bulls can't find a first-round pick, and that's why they haven't pulled the trigger. You know how these things go, though. There's no pressure to get anything done until the deadline, and that's when teams come up with whatever their real offer is. Now, if you look at Nikola Mirotic, he's kind of come down to earth a little bit. In January, he's shooting 38%, a little over that from the three-point line. His true shooting percentage is down from that insane level, but it's still around 60%, which is really, really good. He's still playing very well. I think Nikola Mirotic at this point is who he is. Now, I guess, is that a great thing? Is that good enough for other teams? I think that it is. I think it is still a very, very strong player. His percentages over the last month are now kind of in line with what they were earlier in his career. Except he's just playing better, hitting maybe, I guess, a few more shots. Like, at times he's a good three-point shooter, at times he's a good driver, at times he's inconsistent, but now he's kind of built in some consistency at both shooting and driving. I also think his defense has been pretty solid. He might actually be the Bulls' best front-court defender. I mean, he's clearly better than Markkanen and Portis, and I think I'd have to say he might be better than Lopez when you start looking at the types of things people have to do defensively for big men. I think Lopez clearly can guard someone down low in the paint better, but Nikola Mirotic really does a pretty good job on the perimeter, and I think that's actually a little bit more important in today's NBA, is how you can guard those perimeter players. It's been an interesting few days watching Lauri Markkanen play as well, because Lauri got to go up against Anthony Davis, he got to go up against Joel Embiid, and so seeing him play those two guys who are both super athletic, have a lot of length and rangy games, I think it was kind of a challenge for him. His shooting and scoring wasn't quite to where it was, and you could see at times he struggled going up against that type of length that he hasn't seen so much. And you're still not going to see so many guys like that. It's not like every team's got an Embiid or a Davis on them. You know, he did play probably, off the top of my head, I'm thinking it's the two best centers in the NBA. So obviously that's going to be a tough matchup for Markkanen, but it was, I think, good experience for him to get to play those guys and get a feeling for that type of length. He actually did a pretty good job inside against the Pelicans. His outside shot wasn't really falling. His outside shooting overall has been pretty poor. He did hit 3 in the game against the Lakers where he didn't hit anything inside. But his scoring has just been a little bit inconsistent recently, though. And it's one thing that I find a little bit interesting. You know, I was watching the Lakers game, and Stacey King is going off about how they got to get the ball to Lowry. Lowry's his great player. They got to get him the ball. He's your best player. I don't know. I don't think Lowry is the Bulls' best player. I mean, I think I think Nico is definitely better than Lowry at this specific moment in time. Certainly in creating his own shot, he's better. Lowry really, most of his threes are kind of the catch and shoot variety where he has a good amount of openness. I don't see him making a whole lot of the contested threes. That's one thing you really have seen with Mirotić this year is he's hitting a lot of the contested threes. And I think that is a much tougher thing to do. And it's very impressive the types of threes Nico is shooting. And that's partially why his shooting percentage has dropped down, because he's taking like crazy style difficult threes a lot of the times and trying to generate a lot of offense for this team. And his points per minute are still very high. I think he's around 24 points per 36 minutes, which is a great scoring rate. If someone trades for Nico and gives up, say, a pick that's around 20-ish, they will really have gotten a great deal, even only keeping for Nico for 2 years, if they can do something interesting in those 2 years. Odds are that guy you pick at 20, probably not going to be a big impact player. Now, if from the Bulls' perspective, you look at their draft history, and you start thinking, like, maybe, you know, these picks in this range might be really valuable, because the Bulls have done a really great job of taking good players in this range, you know, over the course of history. They've been pretty much excellent with their late first round picks and finding guys who are at least somewhat valuable. Is that guy going to be better than Nico? Probably not. They're probably not going to get a better player. But if you don't think Nico is going to stay and you don't think you're going to be able to keep him, then it makes sense to at least get something decent. You know, don't give up a player for nothing if you don't have to. And we'll see how that goes. I don't think the Bulls are going to go all in the tank. I don't think they're going to trade Robin Lopez as an example. I don't think they're going to trade Justin Holiday or David Mwaba. Those are other guys that they could move that probably there's a good chance they may not keep around and are helping them win at this exact moment in time. And right now, Jaren Grant is the tank commander, General Grant. Yeah, it's just, we could call him, because he's just not quite able to get it done as a starting point guard. You can't blame him. I mean, the guy's clearly not even making good backup point guard money. I mean, he's making like third string point guard money. And I think Jaren Grant is maybe getting a little extra heat than he deserves because he's pushed into the starting point guard role and that's kind of above him. You know, in this Pelicans game, he had an amazing start to the game, but then it was just, he completely wilted as soon as they tried to trap him. And the thing with Grant is he's pretty deliberate. He's not going to do anything too fancy. You know, he hangs on to his dribble, which in general, even though people complain when point guards over dribble, as long as you're moving around, I don't have such a huge problem with that. You know, you would like to see him pass and get the ball out of his hand sometimes, but the Bulls don't really cut all that much. They don't have enough movement in their offense, so I can see why the point guard might dribble around a lot in the way the Bulls tend to do things. So he does tend to, you know, hang on to the ball and dribble a lot, and he isn't great at creating his own shot. His vision is very so-so. You know, he doesn't make mistakes, but he doesn't make much happen. In the end, he just doesn't apply much pressure to the opposing defense. And when you see Chris Dunn out there, you know, a lot of the same types of things can be kind of true with Dunn. Sometimes he'll hang on to his dribble a little bit too long or a whole lot. But the thing is, Dunn just applies a lot of pressure to the opposing defense. He definitely takes much higher risk passes. He'll definitely attempt higher risk shots. He's flying into the lane. You know, it's like there's a defense is on edge when Chris Dunn has the ball. And we haven't seen that with Jaren Grant. And then once you go past Grant, to Ryan Archie Diacono, I think. I don't know. I'm gonna have to guess on how to say that because I normally count on the announcers to tell me, but they say it different almost every time as well. So my apologies. We'll call him Ryan, though. I feel a little weird about that because he's not such a big name that we should call him by his first name. I almost think like you need either like a super unique name or you need to be just amazing, like Michael Jordan. We could call him Michael, but you know, enough about that. So. And once you go to there, I mean, then things also get really worse. We don't really have good backup point guards. We end up playing either Levine or Valentine will end up doing a lot of the ball handling. And, you know, that's okay, but they're not necessarily point guards either. And we'll see how things go. I have liked the way Valentine has played the last few games. That guy's got a lot of swagger, a lot of confidence, a pretty good combination of skills overall. I'm a little interested to see how he can continue to develop. I don't know that I'm really high on him, but I think he's actually got some decent potential to be a pretty decent player, especially from the draft he came from and the position we took him. I think the Bulls may have gotten a pretty good value with Valentine. So we'll continue to watch his development, of course, as well. Now, as far as the Bulls making the playoffs, which I was just a fan of not so long ago, boy, does that look dicey now. The Bulls kind of needed to win, it looks like, probably 41, 42 games in order to get in. And after these three losses, they're now at 31 losses. So now you're going to have to win only 9 more losses against probably 22, 23 wins. And I think that's going to be awfully tough. I mean, I think right now to finish with 42 wins, it will be 24 24 more wins versus 9 losses. And I don't think the Bulls are capable of that. So I don't think they're likely to make the playoffs. And if that is the case, I think I'm okay. I think I'm back on the tank train. I know I've been waffling. I know I've been wishy-washy. But the Chris Dunn injury really changed everything because the Bulls aren't going to have Dunn for another stretch of games. I mean, we don't know exactly when he's going to come back, so we can't even predict that. But you have to think if you're the Bulls, he's probably not coming back till after the All-Star game just because you've got that break. So why would you try to rush him back early when you're going to have that extra 6 days of rest? And if you're the Bulls management, you're probably not so excited about maybe trying to force wins, you know, after this stretch where you kind of realize like the playoffs are now, you know, out of the picture and it's not going to happen. You know, so with that said, and you're not going to be able to make the playoffs most likely, I think the Bulls might say, yeah, we'll hold out Dunn a couple extra games, get him this extra rest, even if he was ready a couple games before the All-Star game. No reason to bring him back. Just, you know, just let him rest out to the All-Star game, be fully healthy, show how much you care about your players, et cetera, et cetera, and then see how things go. And if they trade Nico as well, then I think, you know, they'll really be at a point where they're not going to have so much offense. But you've really just seen the last few games, the Bulls could not get into an offensive flow. They just could not hit shots. The ball wasn't moving. People were cutting. And it really was Chris Dunn being absent that caused a lot of that problem. One thing I'd like to talk a little bit about is Zach LaVine. So Zach LaVine came out and we were super happy. I mean, at least I was, and probably you were too. His first couple games when he came out, he's shooting the ball really excellently. You know, just looks really good. His defense is really poor, but you know, he's shooting the ball well and you're like, all right, he looks athletic. He's got this step back move. He's taking, you know, jaunts onto the rim. You know, just in general looking pretty good, right? And that's a great thing. But his last game since then, I mean, he's really struggled. I mean, he's really struggled to play well for Chicago. And I think that's going to be a challenge that the Bulls have to monitor. And it's going to become a really interesting decision on what the Bulls decide to do with LaVine with his contract extension now. So we don't know how things are going to line up when he finally, you know, gets towards the end of the season. Obviously, he's a work in progress right now. And I will say he's averaging per minute the highest scoring volume he's averaged in his career at 22.6. The only problem with that is his true shooting percentage is 48.6, which is just terrible. I mean, it's terrible. He's got just like chucking the ball up like crazy. Like he's out there. And at first, I didn't think this was going to be a problem. I thought it was going to be fine after seeing these first few games. But now Zach LaVine looks exactly like I said I might be scared he would do, which is he's out there and he's like, I'm going to get my shots up. I'm a shooter. I'm a scorer. It doesn't matter if I'm shooting or scoring well. I got to work through this rust by just taking more shots. And LaVine is just jacking up shots like crazy, despite really having a pretty horrendous true shooting percentage. And so, you know, he's not helping the team at all right now. And if things go on like this, if it plays out like this and until the off season and he doesn't make considerable improvements, what are you going to do with LaVine? I mean, here's a guy who's a pretty poor defender. I mean, at times terrible. I actually think it's a pretty fixable thing for him because he's okay. I think once he gets lined up on a guy man on man, I think he has the athletic ability and the size to be a good defender, but he just doesn't seem to have the defensive awareness or the defensive IQ off the ball, and he seems to get lost a lot. But when he's on the ball, I think he's actually, you know, he's fine. And so you have LaVine, who's not really a good defender, not a smart defender, and then you have him, he's got this terrible, terrible true shooting percentage right now. So he's a volume scorer on low percentage, which is actually one of the most harmful things you can have on your team. He went from being Kevin Martin to being Ron Mercer at this point. So he's not a guy who's playing really well for you. And you're going to go into this offseason, he's going to be a restricted free agent. And what is that contract negotiation going to look like? Because the Bulls are going to look at this and going to be like, well, look, Zach, I mean, you're really not playing well. We don't know if you're ever going to be playing well again. We don't know how things are going to go, you know, with your ACL or your knee or whatever's holding you up here. You know, we don't know if it's ever going to be good again. We can't commit to this huge monster deal and have you continue to play at this level. And other teams are probably going to be in the same boat. They're also not going to want to commit huge amounts of money to Zach LaVine if he's playing at this level. And so either he's going to find some team that's willing to take a gamble, in which case the Bulls will have to decide if they're going to match that gamble or not match that gamble, or he's going to have to bet on himself and then say, I'm going to take a qualifying offer and see what happens next year. Or he's going to have to take whatever kind of offer the Bulls offer him, which would, you know, probably be, you know, some type of value contract. So I think this situation has become very intriguing. And we kind of knew that was going to happen. I mean, even when the season started, when we were talking about LaVine, we were talking about how, you know, there's a good chance he's not, you're only going to see him for half a season and he still might have a lot of rust in this half of season. You're going to have to figure out how you value him based on the limited amount that you see him and what he's worth to the team. And I do think that it's accurate that the amount of value the Bulls look like they've gotten out of Chris Dunn, the amount of value they've gotten out of Lauri Markkanen, has changed the dynamic of whether they need to keep Zach LaVine. Zach LaVine came in as the headline piece of this trade. He was what the Bulls were getting and what management kind of sold everyone on. It's like, we're getting Zach LaVine. This guy's a future star. He's super athletic. He's hurt this year, but he's going to come back. He's going to be amazing. You know, this is maybe a future all-star type. He's still very young, super athletic and exciting, flashy. He can shoot everything you think you want out of a player. Zach LaVine is kind of delivering. And so, you know, I think they probably overhyped what he might be. And a lot of fans I've seen do the same thing, talking about how great this kid might be. And maybe he will be. I don't know. But at this point, it doesn't look so likely that he's going to be so great. And we'll have to see how things shape up after he gets another year under his belt. But because Lauri Markkanen now looks like a future all-star, and because Chris Dunn looks like a really good starting point guard, the Bulls don't have pressure so much to keep Zach LaVine if his contract demand is crazy. But I think this has the type of feel to it that it could easily end up in a Nico Mirotic type of scenario, where you end up with a shorter year contract for less money. Because Zach also probably has to look at this and go, look, if I can secure, say, 4 years and $60 million, you know, that sets me up for life. Like, if this ACL thing, you know, really isn't great, and, like, I'm never able to have the same type of impact on the court again, if I take the qualifying offer and I don't play really great, all of a sudden, now, I'm not going to have, like, generational wealth for my whole life and for my kids and grandkids. But $60 million is probably enough that I have that, so maybe I take that. Now, I always say that about pretty much all negotiations, because I know if I was like one of these players, I would completely fold. Because like the gap in like my quality of life, if I got an $80 million deal versus a $60 million deal, would be pretty much nothing. But they have agents, and the agents kind of can feel this thing out, and they can kind of tell them what the risks and rewards are, and you know, they can kind of help them make that decision and really try to force management into something. But I think we should brace ourselves for a long, difficult LaVine negotiation when we get to the offseason. This is not going to be something that gets done quickly. I'd imagine there's a good chance it's not something that gets done very friendly either, and that there's some bad blood in this negotiation because LaVine might not be playing well. Now, LaVine can solve all these problems simply by playing great over the next few months before the season ends. It's still very early. He's been back for 7 games. He's still on a minutes restriction. He got up to almost 26 last game. I believe his restriction is still around 24, but he should be coming up pretty soon. I mean, I would imagine by the time the Bulls get out of the All-Star break that that restriction's either gone or it's up in the low 30s for minutes. And at that point, you know, restriction or not restriction, you're probably not playing in 40 minutes. So if your restriction is 32, I mean, I think that's probably okay. It doesn't really have any impact. So I think that's actually going to be the most interesting thing, you know, to watch from afar in terms of how it will shape what happens this offseason. It'll be a lot of fun to watch Lauri Markkanen's development, to see him blossom, hopefully, into a star player. I think it'll be fun to watch Chris Dunn's development, and I hope that when he's able to come back from the concussion, that he's able to also have a big impact and show continued improvement on the court and take that step towards being a star. But Zach LaVine's play is going to be really interesting, because while Dunn and Markin are going to be here no matter what, LaVine is going to be a really challenging situation. One other thing I thought was interesting is John Paxson recently said that Bobby Portis could be added to part of the core. You know, did my air quotes in that, as I said that, for the Bulls. And I want to just take your pulse as Bulls fans. Do you feel that Bobby Portis is a core player for Chicago? I think that's interesting, only in that Portis is also going to be up for an extension in another year, and you're going to have to decide how much to pay him. And Portis is kind of a weird player, because at times he's very skilled offensively. I think he was a great pick for where the Bulls got him. He's doing a really nice job offensively. He's extended out his range, you know, towards the three-point line. It's amazing how pretty much all bigs now can shoot threes, like, at least in the low 30s. You know, like, worst-case scenario, like, bigs are now shooting, like, 33-34% from the three-point line, which is, you know, still pretty dangerous, you know, to have out there, that type of option. But Portis has extended his range out to the three-point line. He's a good jump shooter. Really, really deadly when he gets about 6-7 feet from the rim and just does that, you know, little flip or floater. I mean, not, yeah, just tosses the ball kind of in with that one hand. Gets a lot of points off of that shot. And, yeah, he's a pretty good offensive player. defensively, he is the Zach LaVine of big men. Though. It really seems pretty clueless. When I was thinking of comparisons, I was thinking maybe a little bit of Drew Gooden, you know, that type of guy, who can rebound and who could score, but really was just a terrible impact on your team because he was so clueless defensively and struggled so much on the end of the court. So we'll see how things go with Bobby Portis. I think that will also be a really interesting Bulls negotiation to see how much money they're willing to throw at Bobby Portis. Anyway, that will do it for this edition of the Bulls Beat. I can't wait to see what happens as we move towards the trade deadline and see how things go there. But a little bit more time left, probably at least one more podcast before we really get to see, you know, what goes down. So stay tuned, and I'll talk to you guys next week.